Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. After completing the sacrifice, Lord Ramchandra, whose lotus feet were sometimes pierced by thorns when he lived in Dandakaranya, placed those lotus feet in the hearts of those who always think of him. Thus, he entered his own abode, the Vaikuntha planet, beyond the Brahma Jyoti. Purport. The lotus feet of the Lord are always a subject matter for meditation for devotees. Sometimes, when Lord Ramchandra wandered in the forest of Dandakaranya, thorns pricked his lotus feet. The devotees, upon thinking of this, would faint. The Lord does not feel pain or pleasure from any action or reaction of this material world, but the devotees cannot tolerate even the pricking of the Lord's lotus feet by a thorn. This was the attitude of the gopis when they thought of Krishna wandering in the forest with pebbles and grains of sand pricking his lotus feet. This tribulation in the heart of a devotee cannot be understood by karmis, jnanis or yogis. The devotees who cannot tolerate even thinking of the Lord's lotus feet being pricked by a thorn were again put into tribulation by thinking of the Lord's disappearance. For the Lord had to return to his abode after finishing his pastimes in this material world. The word Atma Jyoti is significant. The Brahma Jyoti, which is greatly appreciated by jnanis or monistic philosophers who desire to enter in it for liberation, is nothing but the rays of the Lord's body. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagadanda koti koti shvashesha vasudadi vibhuti binnam tad brahma nishkalam anantam ashesha bhutam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is endowed with great power. The glowing effulgence of his transcendental form is impersonal Brahman, which is absolute, complete and unlimited, and which displays the varieties of countless planets with their different opulences in millions and millions of universes. The Brahma Jyoti is the beginning of the spiritual world, and beyond Brahma Jyoti are the Vaikuntha planets. In other words, the Brahma Jyoti stays outside the Vaikuntha planets, just as the sunshine stays outside the sun. To enter the sun planet, one must go through the sunshine. Similarly, when the Lord or his devotees enter the Vaikuntha planets, they go through the Brahma Jyoti. The jnanis or monistic philosophers, because of their impersonal conception of the Lord, cannot enter into the Vaikuntha planets. But they also cannot stay eternally in the Brahma Jyoti. Thus, after some time, they fall again into this material world. Aruhya krishena param param tadaha patantyado nadita yushmadangrayaha. The Vaikuntha planets are covered by the Brahma Jyoti, and therefore one cannot properly understand what those Vaikuntha planets are unless one is a pure devotee. Om. One time, in our counseling meeting with Shyamanand Prabhu, he told us a very interesting story of one foreign guest who had come to our temple, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. And at that time, we had our Gaurnitai Hall, Brahmacharya Ashram, and then behind that we had a space out room, a little room where luggage was kept and devotees could just rest there. Or escape from the morning program also sometimes. I would do that. Just hide in that hole. But he was telling us that in that room, one time when Shyamanand Prabhu walked in, he found one devotee in tremendous anxiety, in a frenzy, running around the room, round and round and round, shouting, Hanuman, 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 Hanuman. So Shyamanand Prabhu was wondering, what is happening? Why is this devotee running around here and there like this? chanting Hanuman's holy names. No. He chants Hare Krishna. So then, Shamanadru stopped this devotee and asked him that, why are you chanting Hanuman's name? So he said that, I have a flight to catch very soon, and I have packed my luggage, but I have lost the keys to my big traveling bag. And just like Lord Ram dependent on Mother Sita, dependent on Hanuman to find Mother Sita, and it was Hanuman who actually found Mother Sita. So I am praying to Hanuman to please help me find my key. Because he's expert at finding, you know. Even the Lord depends on him. So today at a loss of words, sitting here in front of so many senior Vaishnavas who are supposed to speak, I am also praying to Hanuman to give me the keys to speak some words for my purification and for the glorification of Lord Ram on this divine appearance on the Ram Navami Mahamahotsav festival. Govindrabhu told me to speak about the appearance of Ramayana. So, whatever little I know, I'll begin with discussing that. There are beautiful verses which describe Valmiki Muni, his experiences, his ecstasies, his inspiration before speaking the Ramayana. In fact, Valmiki Muni one time was traveling along with his disciples, and he saw a hunter at one time shooting his arrows towards a pair of birds. And these birds, they were enjoying sense gratification. They were copulating amongst themselves. And in fact, this male bird and female bird were about to experience the height of joy in their union. And just at that time, the male bird was pierced by the arrow of this hunter. So Valmiki Muni felt soft that his heart was as a pure devotee of the Lord, very bad. And he immediately pronounced a curse on the hunter. Now interestingly, this curse that he pronounced towards the hunter was spoken in such a sweet rhyme and meter that Valmiki Muni was himself wondering, how sweet is this rhyme and this meter? But at the same time, he was feeling embarrassed and ashamed that I lost my mental equilibrium, I became agitated, and I cursed this hunter in such a bad way. Of course, Valmiki Muni was later ordered by Lord Brahma to recount the pastimes of Lord Ram and present the pastimes of Lord Ram in the Valmiki Ramayana using the same meter that Valmiki Muni had spoken in his curse towards the hunter. So, this Ramayana is a very special scripture, and Valmiki Muni is the very special devotee who has been ordered and inspired to speak the Ramayana. The connection of the Ramayana and Valmiki Muni with the Vedas is spoken in a very beautiful verse which explains Kujantam Ram Rameti Maduram Madhuraksharam Aruhya Kavita Shakham Vande Valmiki Kokilam. Kujantam Ram Rameti. It is explained that here Valmiki is compared to a kokila, a very sweet cuckoo bird singing in a voice that enchants everyone. So this kokila or cuckoo-like Valmiki has maduram maduraksharam in very beautiful poetry, in sweet words, has presented the Ramayana. And I was hearing a lecture by Gaurang Prabhu where he was explaining the third line, Aruya Kavita Shakham Vande Valmiki Kokilam. Aruya Kavita Shakham. So he was explaining that poetry Actually, Vedas are a big tree. Then poetry is one of the trees of the Vedic scripture. And the perfection of poetry is this Ramayan. So sitting on this branch of poetry of the Vedas, Valmiki Muni, in his sweet voice, has presented the Ramayan. The next verse describes the glory of hearing the Ramayan, or the benefit the devotees would get by hearing this Ramayan that Valmiki Muni has beautifully described. Valmiki Muni Simhasya Kavita Vanacharinaha Shrunvan Rama Kathanadam Konayantim Paramgatim. Now here, Valmiki Muni is compared to Simhasya, a powerful lion. The previous verse, he was compared to a very sweet cuckoo chanting the beautiful verses of Ramayan. But here, he is described as a powerful lion. Kavita Vanacharinaha. And he is giving this kavita, this poetry. Why is he compared to a lion in this verse? Because all those people who hear the roar of this lion, Valmiki, chanting the Ramayan, what will be their experience? Shrunvan Rama Kathanadam Konayanti Paramgatim. If anybody hears this Rama Katha Nadam, Konayanti Paramgatim, who will not achieve the supreme destination? It's a rhetoric question. The answer is, everyone will achieve the supreme destination if they hear this Rama Katha Nadam. Gopi Paranandan Prabhu, when he had come to our temple, one time was explaining that in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is explained that Sa Re Ga Ma Pa Da Ni Sa, these seven swaras they are called, any sound that we can produce from our ears can be encompassed within these seven sounds, with our throat, can be encompassed within these seven sounds. Nobody can produce beyond this with their mundane throats. But he explained that the origin of all sound is nada. That means when yogis, they become detached from the body, detached from the mind, on the level of pratyahara, where they shut their senses against the objects of this world, and when they start looking inwards, at one stage, they start hearing this sound of nada, which is the original sound from the spiritual world. So this sound that Valmiki Muni is producing as a lion is not an ordinary sound of this world. It is Rama Katha Nadam. With his beautiful throat, he is cooing like a cuckoo, but at the same time, he is roaring like a lion, destroying the sinful reactions of anyone who is hearing this sound vibration of Ramayan, and at the same time, giving them the opportunity to get the Param Gatim, the supreme destination of coming out of this material world, beyond the Brahma Jyoti, and ultimately into the Vaikuntha planets, up to Ayodhya, as described in this verse in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Valmiki Ramayan is an inspired scripture. It was inspired into the heart of Valmiki Muni, and he spoke it straight from the depths of his heart in love of Lord Ram. It is very interesting that only those whose hearts are imbued with pure love of God can actually recite such great scripture, reveal it to the world. That's why it's called revealed scripture, because it's revealed to them, the great devotees, and by their mercy it's revealed to the world. And then by hearing that, by the mercy of the great devotees who are revealing it to us, that same love of God which is in their hearts comes into our heart and gives us love of God. Those who do not have love of God, it is not possible for them to carry these transcendental messages of the Lord or the Lord himself in the heart. There is a beautiful pastime of Hanumanji with Lord Lakshman in the Ramayana, which describes this aspect of carrying the Lord in the heart. It is explained that one time Ravan, he penetrated the battlefield and made a reverberating sound, twanging his bow and challenging Lakshman. Ravan shouted, "Today, I will dispatch you to the land of the dead." Lakshman remained unperturbed by this challenge. In fact, he shouted back, "Oh Rakshash, I know where your greatness lies. Your greatness lies in performing outstanding acts of wickedness and in bragging about them. That's all you're great about. None with true excellence indulge in self-praise. If you have any power, stand before me and you will be the person who will be sent to the land of the dead." Seeing Lakshman's proficiency in archery, Ravan was stunned. Lakshman again and again was defeating Ravan, breaking his bow and arrow, and Ravan was losing his consciousness. Under the barrage of darts that Lakshman was shooting at Ravan, Ravan thought that now he has to do something really powerful before Lakshman kills him. So in that situation, Ravan, he took out his Shakti Ayudha weapon, the most dreadful dart that Brahma had gifted to him, put it to his bow and shot it to Lakshman's chest. Unable to withstand its burning impact, Lakshman faints. Now Ravan approaches him fast and tries to carry Lakshman onto his chariot into the city of Lanka. However, when Ravan is trying hard and hard, he finds it impossible to raise the fallen Lakshman to his shoulders. Now, what is the power of Ravan? He is a lifter of mountains. The Ramayana explains, "Himavan mandaro merus trailokyam vasamaharah shakyam bhujabhyam uddhartum na shakya bharatannujah." A very interesting comparison is given, that Ravan, the lifter of mountains, Himavan Mandaro Merus, he can lift the Himalayas, the Mandara mountain, he can lift even the Meru mountain and shake it. Trailokyam va sahamarahe, any mountains in any of the three planetary systems, Ravan's arms are powerful enough to shake them. Shakyam bhujabhyam uddhartum, shakyam, he has the power. But here is an unconscious Lakshman lying on the ground. Na samkhya bharatanujaha. But he's not able to lift Lakshman onto those same powerful shoulders and put him on the chariot. At the same time, Hanuman, he sees that Lakshman has fallen unconscious on the field and he runs to rescue in a great frenzy. And he deals a mighty powerful blow at Ravan's chest. When Ravan gets this blow of Hanuman, he reels under it. Blood gushes out from his mouth, from his eyes, his ears, his nose, and he falls flat on the deck of his chariot, not knowing what happened to him. With faltering steps, he somehow staggers onto the chariot. He settles down on it, faints, and loses consciousness. At that time, Hanuman lifts Lakshman with great ease and carries him to Ram. Ram, simply by his loving touch, the Shakti Ayudha weapon, it loses its hold on Hanuman, on Lakshman. His wounds are healed up and he becomes as strong as before. Now the interesting thing is that Lakshman's weight had remained the same, both to Ravan and to Hanuman. However, the intentions of Ravan and Hanuman were different. He became too heavy for Ravan to lift because his intentions were very hostile and wicked. But what about Hanuman? What about his intentions? That is described in another beautiful verse. Vayusuno suritvena bhaktya paramayachasaha shatrunama prakamyopi laghutva agamat kapehe. Shatrunama Prakamyopi. Ravan, he hated Vishnu and his devotees. And he was out to do mischief towards them. But Hanuman, who was loyal and devoted to Lakshman, it is explained, Suritvena, he was greatly affectionate, loyal, Bhaktya Paramayacha Saha, and he had great devotion towards the Lord and his devotees. Therefore, it became very easy for him to carry Lakshman. Lagutva Agamat Kape, Lakshman became very light for him. However, for Ravan, it became very heavy. So it is this attitude of being either hostile or friendly that decides the heaviness or the lightness, not the substance which remains unaltered. It's a very powerful statement the Acharyas give. It very much inspired my heart. It is the attitude of hostility or friendliness towards the Lord, not the lightness or the heaviness of the object. Because the object, the Lord, remains the same. But it is the attitude which allows the Lord to enter into our heart. The example given is that to a loving mother, the child seems very light. In fact, how much ever the heavier the child is, the mother will never want to hit the child to the ground and say, oh, you're so heavy, you're giving me so much trouble. No, this is a burden of love. Prabhupada explains, it is a burden, it is heavy, but it is a burden of love. So to a mother, the child appears light as a feather, but to the others, the same child may appear as heavy as lead. So if Krishna consciousness sometimes becomes a heavy burden, then it is not the process which has created the burden. It is our practice of the process which has created the burden. The process is perfect, Srila Prabhupada explained. We are not sometimes perfect. In fact, many times we are not perfect. And therefore, because we don't perfectly follow the process, sometimes it becomes difficult for us to carry the Lord in our heart. And even when Srila Prabhupada makes statements like, Krishna consciousness is just recreation. One reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, what do you do for recreation? Prabhupada said, whatever we do is recreation. Now it's very easy to preach this. And in fact, one time Srila Prabhupada also said, yesterday only I was reading it. Jai Sachinandan Prabhu was showing me this book, Radha Damodar Vilas. There Srila Prabhupada is quoting that, what is the proof of advanced Krishna consciousness? And almost 100% to the effect what Srila Prabhupada quoted was, that when one works hard 24 hours of the day and one does not lose energy, the rather one becomes more and more inspired, then such a person has achieved Krishna consciousness. And then of course about chanting, Srila Prabhupada's famous quote is there, that how do we know we have chanted good rounds today? After finishing 16 rounds, we feel like chanting 16,000 rounds. So of course this is very high level of Krishna consciousness. And sometimes it feels light years and millions of light years away from where we are. But at least we should know that the burden that we feel in Krishna consciousness is not because of the Lord being so heavy to carry. No, the Lord is light as a feather. For Hanuman, lagutva agamat kape, he was so light. In fact, the Lord was eager to go into his hands. But because we are carrying the heavy burden of our anarthas and lack of surrender, we find it difficult to progress on this path sometimes. So anyone who loves and feels attached to Vishnu will be able to bear and carry Vishnu and his devotees, not the one who has hostility towards him. I was reading one article one time, which was describing what happens to people who are about to die. Generally, especially the emotional states and the attachments that these people have when they're about to die. And the interesting thing is that everyone in this world definitely is sure to die. So this emotional experience is not only for those who are about to die, but for all of us who go through challenges in this world. And then the ultimate challenge, Prabhupada says, the ultimate examination is death. So we may also go through this, and it's a good lesson to learn how to overcome these challenges. It is explained that the first time a person is told that you have a terminal disease, that means in 3 months or 6 months, you're about to die. So the first thing the person does is denial. the person doesn't accept this fact to be true. Because in psychology it is explained that sometimes when a big problem comes to you, then one has to deny that problem to cope with it. Who was that? Burijan Prabhu, when he came to our temple, he spoke of a very powerful point. I hope it was Burijan Prabhu only, one of the senior devotees. He said that the beginning of Krishna consciousness takes place when we embrace the dragon of ourselves. It was a very powerful point he made. That as long as we remain on the bahirarthamanina, you know, we are so much focused on outside world and we don't even realize the kind of anarthas that we have in our heart, then everything looks hunky-dory, simple, jolly. And then we are just on the waves of Maya being tossed here and there. But the day we embrace ourself, when we actually look at ourselves really clearly, when we embrace the dragon within, like I think somebody quoted, we were searching for our enemy and we found the enemy as ourselves. Or as Govind Prabhu sometimes tells the story of one devotee was praying to Narsingadev and said that, my Lord, please kill my enemies, destroy my enemies. And he found all the weapons coming towards himself only. So he was wondering what's happening. And the fact was that the enemies were the lust, pride, greed, envy, anger, illusion in one's heart. They are the real enemies to be fought with. That's why I remember many, many, many years back, Bhagwan Prabhu had come to Pune, and one devotee asked him a question that after some time, Krishna consciousness becomes dry, hackneyed, or it becomes like a routine. So how can we enthuse our Krishna consciousness? How can we remove the complacency of our Krishna consciousness? And I clearly remember the smack smile that came on his face. And he just spoke up. He said, if you just get a glimpse of your anarthas, Krishna consciousness will become dynamic. He said, because we just superficially remain and just like materialistic people are, I am okay, you are okay. At least they're trying to become that. We also remain in that same world of I am okay, you're okay. Hari bol, hari bol. You know? But the day we actually embrace the dragon within and feel our anarthas, he said Krishna consciousness will become a dynamic experience. Powerful experience to constantly fight the battle in our own hearts. That's why I remember going through quoting the other day. He was sitting in the room and he said he heard a lecture where one devotee was talking about the Tattenukampam verse. Where he was telling that, what is that? What did he tell? Tattenu kampam shushamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam hridvagvapurbir vidadan namaste. So the qualification to achieve liberation, the Lord is explaining that while going through the difficulties in this world, with one's heart, hridvagvapurbir vidadan namaste, paying obeisances to the Lord, knowing very well that it's loving causeless mercy that he has given unto me. That brings joy in the heart that he gave me such a small reaction for so much nonsense that I have done for millions of lifetimes. And with the heart paying obeisances to the Lord. So now it's becoming more and more subtle. Hrid, vak, vapu. With one's body, it's very easy to pay obeisances or externally give respect to others. With one's tongue, it's a little more difficult because one has to battle the thoughts of one's mind. In the mind, one may be feeling very much angry against that person, but then one has to battle those thoughts, articulate words, and speak something nice about that person. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would do that, you know, bring two devotees together and help glorify each other. But experience says in my own heart that that is always not the guarantee of having affection towards another person. It's very easy to glorify others with our tongue, like they say, you know, the tongue of honey with a heart of poison. Something like that. You know, it's possible. But then, hridvagvapurbir, in the deep core of one's heart, one has to pay obeisances. And what does this deep core of one's heart mean? That he was explaining, when we are alone, when we are suffering, when we are in difficulty, in that time, at the deep core of our heart, what are we taking shelter of? Are we taking shelter of the little pleasures of sense gratification that we had got before coming to Krishna consciousness? Some of us may be attached to sports, for myself also. And when I'm lying in my bed sick, sometimes those thoughts come to my mind of all the matches that I played. So in my heart, I'm not actually praying to the Lord, please save me. The battle is not going on. In fact, The flag of surrender to Maya, not to Krishna, has already been raised. So, so the first step I was talking about was denial. When we deny the truth or the great huge challenge that has come upon us, then we can cope against that challenge. Otherwise, if you just face it directly, it becomes too much for the living entity. And that is why people are so absorbed in this world. If they would actually see the power of Maya and the suffering that Maya is giving, then they would become Krishna conscious very fast. But then they remain in denial. In fact, it's considered to be advanced in material civilization when people say, I have no time. I just have no time. I'm so busy. I have a meeting in the morning. I have a meeting in the afternoon. I have another meeting in the evening and another meeting at night. And I'm so busy, I don't have a second free. Just see how advanced I am. I'm so busy with material activities. But then a saint, a devotee, sees that this fellow is completely denying God in his own heart. And that emptiness, what is that verse? What is the first verse? Om Purnamada Purnamidam, Purnat Purnamudachate. So the Lord is completely whole, he's perfect. And His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj one time said that the holes that we have in our body and the holes that we have in our heart, that can be satisfied only by the complete whole, Krishna. No amount of sense gratification or rubbing the eyes and rubbing the ears and all these known holes with sense gratification can satisfy us. Only the complete whole of Krishna can satisfy us. So now they have a hole in the heart because they are not turning towards Krishna. So then to cover up for that, they have to engage in so many material activities and deny Krishna. So denial is the first step. After some time, when such a person who has a terminal disease, he experiences anger because now he has to face it. And then he starts cursing, why did God do this to me? What have I done? I'm such a good person. Karna was in the similar situation. As soon as he had to face the fact that now all his bad things that he has done throughout his life, all his sinful activities have now borne fruit, immediately Karna, he started thinking, why is this happening unto me? And the Lord gave us such a beautiful answer to him. Krishna told Karna, my dear friend, men in distress almost always curse destiny and never look towards themselves for their own faults. Men in distress almost always curse their destiny or curse God, and they never look at their own faults. And then Krishna convinced Karna of all the faults that he had done throughout his life, for which he deserved to die at the hands of Arjuna. So one becomes angry. Now after anger subsides for some time, then one starts bargaining. That's the third emotional experience that one goes through. So in bargaining, like if a person is, say, actually this happens with children also, even in regular challenges. As soon as you catch a child, did you eat chocolate? Krishna says no. Krishna was asked, did you eat mud? He said no, deny. It happens, you catch a child, you know, he says, no, I didn't eat chocolate. Then the child becomes angry with you. Why do you always catch me? One chocolate I ate and then you're making such a big thing out of it. If anybody is caught, you know, after some time and they're not accepting, then they become angry towards the person who has caught them. Or if somebody has an addiction, initially you ask him, why are you having this addiction of smoking and drinking? He denies. He said, me? I'm not addicted. Yes, sometimes for fun I have. I can give it up anytime. But actually they know they can't give it up. And even you know they can't give it up. So after denial, when you catch them again and again, then they become angry at you. Why are you singling me out? Why me? Nimittani cha viparitani. Keshava. Anyway, so why I am being singled out? And then after anger, the person starts bargaining. Say if a person has addiction and the doctor has stopped him from taking these addictions, then he tells the doctor, please, allow me to have one cigarette, one smoke, one drink. Please, just one. Because the relapse is so strong, I can't take it. It happens in the emotional challenge for everyone struggling against addictions. Even in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we feel that, let me just enjoy a little bit outside, just that little thing. I think some devotees, I've heard, I can't say with authority where, but I hope I'm correct. It is said that some devotees before their initiation, many, 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 many years back, just the night before that, they drank some tea or went for the last movie or something like that, you know? Because now they're taking vows tomorrow, you know? So that's it. But just that little bit relief, you know? So then one starts bargaining. Give me a little pleasure, please. Now the doctor at that time, for a person who's about to die, has to be very intelligent. Sometimes they have to give in to that person and give him that little bit sense gratification. Because otherwise that person might go crazy. The mind might disturb too much. But then the doctor has to see whether the person is misusing that sense gratification, that little bit of addiction which has been given. Is he trying to enjoy it more and more? Or with that relief, the strength that he has gathered, he's using that strength to fight against those addictions. After the stage of bargaining, if they actually overcome that stage, then one comes to the stage of depression. Because now the problem in its full force is on the head. I am going to die. All my attachments are going to be finished in this world. No more enjoyment. Even this body is going to be finished. And one goes into a deep hole of depression. Because there's no hope. There's no pleasure. There's no idea. There's no vision that they can see that they can enjoy with. That was an interesting thing that His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was speaking this Sunday morning, last Sunday, which touched my heart and inspired me. Such an interesting thing. Maharaj was explaining how Chitraketu was also in depression, frustrated, and Vritrasur was also frustrated. Both were frustrated. But Chitraketu, when he was initially frustrated, he still had a hope to enjoy. And his frustration was this frustration of his hope to enjoy. First time when Angira Muni came, he had hope, but his face was crumpled up. So he said, Angira Muni, I'm suffering like anything, please give me a son. Angira Muni gave him a son, Harshashoka. Then Harshashoka died. Again he was frustrated and depressed. But at that time also, he had his hope alive that I can enjoy in this world. And that hope which was crushed had frustrated him. Then as Maharaj said, when his son came to life and spoke transcendental knowledge to him, and then Chitraketu said, you go ahead back to Godhead and I'm following you now. Very soon I'll also be coming. And then when Chitraketu got divine realizations by the mercy of Narad Muni, then it awakened within his heart, transcendental knowledge. Then of course he was cursed by Parvati and he became Vritrasur. And in the recent shlokas that we are discussing, Vritrasur is frustrated with the whole material scenario. He doesn't have one friend. Everyone around him is irreligious. The demons are running away from the battle, irreligious. The demigods are going there and hitting them from behind, irreligious. And he's cursing everyone. And he's cursing his birth also as a demon. And he's totally frustrated with this world. But this frustration is inspired by a divine and a very deep eagerness to associate with the Lord and his devotees. This frustration is not this frustration of the smashing of material hope. In fact, Vritrasura had no hope in this material world around him, either in his own talents, in his own birth, or in amongst any of the associates that he had. His eagerness was inspiring frustration from this world, but he wanted to go back home, back to Godhead. So, coming back to where Chitraketu was, when one's hopes are completely frustrated, then one goes into deep depression. At this time, there is very powerful positivity required to pull that person out from the negativity of depression where he is. And when one comes out of this deeply depressed state, then one comes to the fifth platform of acceptance. Accepted, I'm going to die. At such a stage, a person becomes peaceful. So, any person who faces any small challenge or the biggest challenge of death in this material world goes through these five stages of mental experience before they come to peace. The first is denial to cope with the problem. The second is anger to fight against the problem or feel bad that I am the one who's being singled out. The third is bargaining with the person to somehow enjoy a little bit still, keeping the hope alive. The fourth is depression when the hope is completely smashed. And finally, acceptance. Let the Lord's plan act in my life. As Jesus said, let thy will be done, my Lord, not my will. At that stage, one becomes peaceful. Now, in the Ramayana, we find, because this is an inspired scripture, the scripture inspired from the heart of Valmiki Muni, we find even very similar emotions all over Ramayana. However, all these emotions are on the transcendental platform. They are evoked within the hearts of the devotees, and each of these emotions brings the devotees closer to Krishna, closer to Lord Ram also. So although the devotees may also go through these emotions, the Lord's personal associates, they don't go through these emotions because they're not accepting the Lord's plan. No, they go through these emotions because these emotions bring them closer to Lord Ram in his pastimes, in the Leela. So the episode is that Dashrath has made all the arrangements for the installation of Lord Ram, and after working so hard throughout the day, making all the installation ceremonies, he goes into Kaikeyi's apartment for his evening rendezvous with Kaikeyi, because she was his favorite queen. And just as the moon enters the sky in the night, spreading his beautiful rays, Dashrath, with great joy, enters into Kaikeyi's palace. There are birds chirping, there's music all around, there are beautiful paintings, there are silks decorating the palace, beautiful fruit trees just outside. The seats are made up of ivory with white cushions and soft foamy beds on top of them, gold embroidered linen garments all around, and a very beautiful setting. But in that beautiful setting, Dashrath is surprised to find that why has Kaikeyi not come in time to meet me? Where is she? So dismayed at the strange report that he got, that Kaikeyi is in her chambers where she sulks, she feels bad, he was surprised and he ran towards the sulking chamber. Looking sadly at his wife, who was dearer to him than his heart, he was wondering what is in her heart. What was in her heart? Wickedness and sinful desire. She was lying down like a rose creeper that has been violently torn from a tree, or as an apsara who has just fallen from heaven, or a doe who has been caught in a hunter's net, completely helpless over there. So Dashrath looked at her and stroked her beautiful face and spoke just as a mighty lordly elephant would speak to his loving affectionate mate, asking him, what has happened to you? Why are you lying here like this? Has anyone insulted you? Please tell me. I shall punish him immediately. Or is it that you want somebody who has been punished to be released? Or is it that you are sick? I shall call all the royal physicians immediately to come to your rescue. Kaikeyi, comforted and encouraged by these words, she put forward her terrible proposal. She said, I have not been offended, but I want you to accomplish something that's deep in my heart. Please make a vow that you shall fulfill my desire. Dashrath said, in this entire world, my dear Kaikeyi, there is no one dearer to me than Lord Ram. I take a vow today in the name of Lord Ram. Please tell me, O good lady, what is your desire? I shall completely satisfy you. Kaikeyi inwardly rejoiced. Just see the power of words. Just by the words of Dashrath, because Kaikeyi knew the power of the words of an honorable man, she rejoiced inwardly. In fact, when one promises something or speaks with one's mouth, sometimes one's honor is known by how one keeps those words. Even in a moment of attention or inattention, when Bali Maharaj promised 3 steps of land to Vamandev, it was just offhand. He said, I can easily give it to you. But still, Bali Maharaj said that the earth cannot bear a liar. Now, it was not a big lie that he would be speaking, because even according to scripture, Shukracharya had given him so many ideas how to circumvent this promise that he had given in a pious way, not incurring any sin. But still he said, because I have spoken my word, I cannot go back on it. I have promised, and this is Vishnu. Also we find that Bhishma Pitama, when he gave his word to his father, Maharaj Shantanu, that, and of course to his father, the father-in-law of his father, the father of Satyavati. Because Satyavati's father had said that you cannot, that means his daughter, cannot be married to Maharaj Shantanu because the elder brother, elder son, Devavrat, his name was, is already living. So then Devavrat promised. He said, I promise that I will have nothing to do with the throne this entire life. But then Satyavati's father was very intelligent. He said that you may have nothing to do with the throne and you vow, but your children, they might, because they will be elder than the children of Satyavati, they will have a claim to the throne and there will be a big fight. So then he made another very powerful vow. He said, throughout my life I vow that I shall never marry. And from the skies, the demigods, they threw flowers. Bhishma, Bhishma, the great one. What a terrible, what a powerful vow he has taken. Now the interesting thing is that Satyavati, after the death of both her children, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, there was no heir to the throne. So she came to Bhishma and said, Bhishma, I order you to take charge of the throne. He said, no, I have already taken a vow. She said, but I have... It was because of me that you were inspired to take this vow, and now I myself am ordering you to break your vow and take care of the throne. But Bhishma was very strong, powerful. He said, let the sun become dark. Let the sky lose its color. Let the earth be powdered to dust and ashes. And let all the waters in the oceans be evaporated. But I shall not give up my vow against any power that forces me to give up the vow. So it's very easy and cheap to take vows. But then, the honor of one's words. That's why on initiation day, we take vows. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. And I will chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So Maharaj again and again mentions that, quoting Prabhupada, that a gentleman is one who will not break his vows. And Prabhupada, he spoke that how do you know who is my devotee? You will find him to be a gentleman with all the good qualities. So that was Bhishma's power of word. And here Dashrath, by giving his power of word, has pleased the heart of Kaikeyi. She speaks that which would have been difficult to speak for an enemy. Like death that had arrived at Dashrath's door, Kaikeyi was about to speak. And then she asked for her two boons. Actually, before she asked for the boons, she inspired Dashrath more. That, I know you love Ram, and I know you've taken this vow, but... And as she was not speaking these two boons, Dashrath wanted to encourage her. He said, let all the gods, the sun, the moon, the sky, the fire, all the directions, the day, night, the universe itself bear witness that I, Dashrath, take a vow to fulfill the desire of Kaikeyi. Kaikeyi looked at her bemused husband and then poured out the poison. She said, I want Ram to be banished to the forest for 14 years and the same preparation that you have made for his coronation be given to Bharat and Bharat be coronated as the future king of Ayodhya. Just as Dashrath heard these words, he felt as if he was a deer being dragged towards the snare of a hunter. Gripped by agonizing anxiety, hearing the cruel utterances, Dashrath was feeling utter disbelief. It was like a dream or a hallucination from a past life. And Dashrath started thinking, am I becoming insane due to old age? Kaikeyi loves Ram. Her words resounded again and again in the entire palace. Dashrath, out of grief, fainted away. As distressed as a deer at the sight of a lion, the king sat upon the bare floor, sighing like a poisonous serpent, transfixed by mystical spells of a hunter not being able to move. Alas, alas, what a calamity has come upon me. Swooning again and again, Dashrath collapsed. That was his first experience. Previously he denied, oh Kaikeyi, I don't think this is true. She loves Ram. But now, as he came back, he was angry. He was furious. He thundered as if about to consume Kaikeyi with her wrath, with his wrath. He said, "Oh, cruel and wicked-hearted woman, you are bent upon destroying my entire race. By harboring you all this while in my life, I have held at my bosom a venomous snake." With tears in his eyes, Dashrath spoke up, "The world may exist without the sun. The crops may grow without water. But in no event of life can I remain without Ram. Please give up your sinful desire, O Kaikeyi. Just give up your sinful desire." After being angry at Kaikeyi, seeing that she was completely unfazed and unmoved, Dashrath started bargaining with her. He said, "If you feel even slightly for your son Bharat, let him become king. But let Ram also remain here. Why do you want to banish Ram into the forest? Allow Ram to remain. As previously so many times you have told me about your love for Ram, why do you want to send him to the forest?" Kaikeyi did not waver. In fact, she had lost her trust in Dashrath. Because of being poisoned by the words of Mantra, these words of Dashrath were empty, with no power, not able to attract her in any way. This is the power of association with materialistic people and materialistic words. It may be even not exactly impious, but sometimes devotees may indulge in sports or some other hearing, because it becomes very difficult. It's an overpowering surge because everyone around it is talking about it, hearing about it. But then the difficulty is that when one keeps hearing these sound vibrations, then when one hears transcendental sound vibration, the transcendental sound vibration cannot sit in one's heart, because there is so much that space, like in, I think Devamrit Maharaj was speaking the other day, that there is only enough space of thoughts in our mind. How much can you think? I think it was Kavichandra Maharaj, one of them. How much can you think about? So if we chant Hare Krishna and we think about the Lord, then all that space is created in our minds and in our thoughts. And then there is so much space for the Lord, and there is so much time for the Lord. Silence rang in the court. Mantra's poison had entered deep. Dashrath could not think clearly. He was torn between his love for Lord Ram. He could not send him away, and to his boon towards his wife, and the infamy to his line that would come by not adhering to the truth. So after anger, Dashrath falls victim to depression. Dashrath starts begging. After bargaining, actually he's still bargaining, and then he's going to fall into depression. He starts begging at Kaikeyi, falls at her feet and says, "Please show me mercy in my last days. Unbearable grief and harsh words, I cannot tolerate them. Joining my palms, I fall at your feet again and again. With piteous pleas, he begged her for his own life." Kaikeyi looked coldly at him. Gripped by overwhelming anxiety, he simply tossed about, praying again and again for deliverance. Kaikeyi did not reply. She allowed the silence to ring in the palace. Kaikeyi, her heart hardened by mantra, her intelligence confused by the gods, she was fixed in her evil determination. She fiercely spoke up. "After giving these boons in the assembly of sages, when they ask you, O Dashrath, about your promise, you could not stand up to your promise. What will you reply? Will you admit that you proved untruthful to your own wife, whom you owe your life? That you promised and you backed out?" Actually, while Dashrath was begging, in Kaikeyi's mind and in her heart, she was losing more and more faith in Dashrath. Because he had promised and now he was backing out from his promise, Kaikeyi was convinced that Dashrath hates her. Dashrath wants to give the throne to Ram, and now Kaushalya, Ram's mother, after becoming the queen of the king, I mean the mother of the king, she will mistreat Kaikeyi. And Bharat will simply become a beggar, or at best a slave. So she was convinced that even after giving his boon, this great monarch Dashrath is ready to go back on his own words. I am 100% convinced that he hates me. Her doubts about his sincerity and his intentions became deeper. She spoke up, "O foolish king, it seems at the expense of anything. You wish to install Ram as your successor and enjoy with Kaushalya." Kaikeyi was furious. Dashrath was struck like a thunderbolt with the forceful words of Kaikeyi and suddenly dropped to the ground just like a tree being felled by the thunderbolt, crying out, "Ram, Ram, alas, alas, save me." Like an insane man, he lost his mental equilibrium and lay motionless on the cold floor. At that time, Dashrath spoke about his thoughts aloud. "Kings assembled here for Ram's coronation, they'll ridicule me. How has this foolish man ruled the world all the while? How is he allowed Ram to be banished? He's foolish. When wise men ask me, and if I say, well, actually I did it to support the cause of truth because I had promised Kaushalya, what about the promise that I made to Lord Ram? When they ask me that, what will I do?" In that deranged condition, he spoke up, "What reply will I give to poor Kaushalya? When she asks me, why did I render such an unkind act to her? Oh, I neglected that godly lady for Kaikeyi." Mentioning Kaushalya's name, he lost his mental balance and simply stared into the sky and lied there, writhing in pain to think of Ram in the forest, who was accustomed to ride on fine chariots, who would now be walking with barefoot. Royal cooks were competing for making fine foods for him, will now be eating just dry fruits and roots in the forest, and clad in the most fanciest of robes. Now Ram being clad in forest clothes. Dashrath could not take it anymore, and writhing in pain, he felt his life slipping away. Just at that time, Vasishtha entered the hermitage. he entered the city from his hermitage early in the morning. He told Sumantra, "Please go and invite Dashrath Maharaj, because now it is time for the coronation ceremonies to begin." So Sumantra, he entered into Kaikeyi's palace, paid obeisances to Kaikeyi and Dashrath, and then spoke that as just as the sun sustains all beings around the world, arise, O king, just as the sun arising from the eastern hills. Or as Matali, the minister of Indra, glorifies Indra with so many sweet words, "I have come here to glorify your prowess, to wake you up, to kindly come towards the palace, to begin the coronation ceremonies." Dashrath spoke that, "My dear Sumantra, you have chosen very nice words and you speak so sweetly, but the very same words attack my heart like a sharp dagger, because I cannot get up from here to begin the coronation ceremony." And then just while speaking, he left off speaking nothing more because he had no strength within his body to speak. Kaikeyi said, "Well, actually Dashrath has not slept whole night because he was very excited about the coronation ceremony. So you go and call Ram over here, and then everything will be settled." So Sumantra went into the palace and immediately called Ram. Ram was talking to Sita. So at that time, he said, "Well, maybe Kaikeyi and my father, they're so excited to have me coronated that so early in the morning, just when the day is about to break, they want to start the proceedings. So I must immediately go." So Ram came out of his palace quarters as a mighty mountain lion that comes out of his own cave, and then went towards Dashrath's palace. Ram, fully composed in mind, saw Dashrath and Kaikeyi sitting on the couch. On the golden couch, he saw that Dashrath, he was sighing and crying with tears streaking across his face, just like an eclipsed sun or a Brahmana who has spoken a lie. A very interesting comparison. A Brahmana who has spoken a lie would feel so heavy in heart that his eyes would be streaking with tears. Of course, I don't know whether this is true for Kali Yuga. This is Treta Yuga. And he was repeating only Ram, Ram, desperately waiting for Ram to come. Like the ocean that was At the rising of the full moon, Ram became agitated by seeing Dasharath in this condition. And he asked Kaikeyi, why is my father not waking up to greet me? Even if he is angry, let him come and curse me. But oh godly lady, oh great lady, please request my father to come and receive my obeisances. Kaikeyi, she spoke boldly, thinking only of her own interest. Well, the fact is that the king wants to speak to you something which is very dear to his heart, but he will not tell you because you are his beloved son. So I will tell you. The king has made a promise to me, but now, not being able to fulfill that promise, he is lying over here like this. The ever truthful monarch wishes to build a dam across a stream whose waters have already passed. He has already promised like the stream of water, but now he wants to build a dam and go against his promise. But Ram, you are the only person who can save the honor of your father. So now, the onus depends upon you. The responsibility is on your shoulders. Distressed Ram spoke in the hearing of his father, "Alas, alas, how shameful it is for me to hear these words. Doubting my devotion to my father, at the very command of my father, at this very moment, I can leap into blazing fire. I can swallow deadly poison or plunge into the deep ocean with a big heavy rock tied to my neck. But why is my devotion to my father being challenged?" Now, sometimes it's easy to make such promises. Just a few days back, I think it was just 1 or 2 days back, I was also guilty to this, to one of our senior devotees. I promised something very foolish, you know, something that, it was really very foolish, you know. So he immediately countered back. He said, "You're saying this because you know that I will not ask this of you. Because definitely this cannot, neither can you do it, neither am I going to ask it of you, therefore you are promising such a thing." So Srila Prabhupada said, it is very easy to speak Bhagavad Gita. Like one fellow came and he spoke, he said, "I can speak Bhagavad Gita in 40 minutes. Srila Prabhupada asked him, "Can you live Bhagavad Gita for 40 minutes? Can you live Bhagavad Gita for 40 seconds? Or even 4 seconds? That's the challenge. So to die is very easy. In fact, there is a famous pastime in our temple where His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj gave some clothes to one of our devotees and said, "Will you die?" Actually, he asked one of our devotees, "Will you die for me?" And this devotee in great enthusiasm said, "Yes, Maharaj, I'm ready to even die for you." And then Maharaj gave him a pair of clothes. He said, "Please dye these clothes for me." D-Y-E, you know. So he was telling his realization that dying is very easy because only once you have to give up your body. But living in the instructions of Guru throughout our life means death to the false ego moment to moment. That is very difficult. So Lord Ram, not only promising that he is ready to die at the command of his father, but we shall see how he is ready to live at the command of his father. Kaikeyi said, "These are the two boons that your father has asked." And as soon as Dasharath heard these boons, he cried out in pain. Ram stood without emotion. Kaikeyi continued, "Overcome with compassion, your father cannot look at you. Please help him to overcome his difficult situation. Immediately leave for the forest." Even though Kaikeyi had spoken such cruel words, Ram did not yield to grief. "So be it. I shall go to the forest. What is the problem? But why is father rejecting me?" Lord Ram cried out, "I could never transgress his order, even as the ocean could never transgress the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My father is a representative of the Lord for me. Just, Kaikeyi, please wait. Let me take his permission before I leave." Kaikeyi rejoiced in her heart to see this response of Lord Ram. She said, "Let messengers be immediately sent to Bharat, lest some impediments come," because Ram has just agreed. And she said, "Keen as you are to depart, I think you should leave immediately," she told Lord Ram. "Don't be concerned with the king's silence. I will take care of that. He's too shy to ask himself of you. Therefore, I will take care of everything over here." And the fact is that if you do not leave immediately, he shall not eat or drink anything, because his vow is at stake. Therefore, immediately leave. Dashrath, hearing these harsh words, cried in grief and fell unconscious. Ram put his cool hands on his head, begged his blessings, and left the palace immediately. Just before leaving, Ram spoke to Kaikeyi. She said, "Mother, you certainly see no good points in me. Because the fact is that the mother's order is higher than the father's order. So, you could have directly asked these boons of me and I would have immediately left. But the fact is that you didn't find any good things in me. Therefore, I beg at your feet for forgiveness for all the offenses that I have committed against you." Something like that, to that effect he said. And he begged that, "Please let me take permission of my other mothers and let me take the agreement of Sita before I leave. I just beg for this last blessing of you." No change of mood could be perceived in the heart of Lord Ram any more than a perfect yogi who can transcend all dualities. Now at this point, something very interesting that touched my heart. We're just digressing from here. We'll come back to this point into the battle. Lakshman was hit by the arrows of, I think it was either Indrajit or I think it was his father. It was Ravan himself, you know. One of them, I forget, I'm sorry. But that's not the point of the story that I'm trying to speak by the mercy of the devotees. The story is that Lakshman was hit by this arrow. And he was unconscious. You're correct. It was Indrajit. And Indrajit, after hitting Lakshman and Lord Ram, he had actually massacred the entire army. And almost all the devotees, all the Vanaras, had been destroyed. They were unconscious. Many were even dead. At that time, Hanuman started reviving himself. And he came to consciousness. Vibhishan was the only person who was not hurt in this entire attack. And then Vibhishan started moving around, searching for at least somebody who would be alive or who would have some consciousness. And when he saw that Hanuman is moving, he immediately went to Hanuman and comforted Hanuman. Hanuman, along with the help of Vibhishan, started moving in the ranks of the devastated Vanar army. And there, they found Jambavan. They comforted Jambavan, sprinkled water on his face, and brought Jambavan back to life. And when Jambavan came back to consciousness, the first thing Jambavan spoke is Hanuman still alive? Now it was very interesting that Vibhishan asks Jambavan that, "You are not asking about Lord Ram, you are not asking about Lakshman, you are immediately asking about Hanuman." And Hanuman was right there. So then Jambavan felt very happy. He said, "If Hanuman is alive, then the whole Vanar army can be saved. But if Hanuman was finished, then everything would be destroyed." And then Jambavan explains how Hanuman can go and get those special herbs by which Lord Ram, Lakshman and everybody else can be saved. So now at this time, the interesting thing is that Vibhishan, he gives moral support to Hanuman. Actually, Hanuman had become very much disturbed and bewildered by seeing the situation. And then Vibhishan also gives moral support to Jambavan. And then very soon in the story we see at another time where Vibhishan himself is bewildered. At that time, Hanuman and Jambavan, they give moral support to Vibhishan. And we find so many times in the Ramayana, here Lord Ram, who is so equipoised, he is not affected by this huge reversal that has come upon him. One sannyasi in ISKCON defined calamity. He said, "Calamity, when the truth of the world around you changes, that's calamity. Because we are all little comfortable in our own worlds. And even if some difficulties come, we can battle it because we know the world around us. But when that completely changes, and there is no hope around us, that's a calamity." And at a moment's notice, just see the power of Lord Ram's equipoised nature. And then now we will see Lord Ram giving support and strength to Kaushalya, to Lakshman, But the very same Lord Ram, in the separation from Mother Sita, he becomes bewildered. He becomes lost. And then we find the same Lakshman, who will very soon be heartbroken, giving strength to Lord Ram, who was heartbroken. So what inspired me while reading these sections was that devotional service is something so wonderful. In fact, Shamanandru told this point to me in Mayapur. I was very bewildered and I was like kind of broken. So I went up to him and I was revealing my heart and taking some inspiration from him. And so beautifully he just took out all the bewilderment from my mind, encouraged me, his words inspired me. And then he ended with something that inspired me even more. He said, Premnidhi, Krishna consciousness is something so wonderful that the very same solution that I am giving you will not work for me. There will be another devotee who will have to give the solution to me. So of course, this humility touched me. But then when I was reading these pastimes in Ramayana, these pastimes touched my heart. That sometimes we wonder, am I advanced or am I fallen? Because I can help others who have come newer to Krishna consciousness in their problems, but I am walking around bewildered with my own problems. So am I a senior devotee? Am I a junior devotee? Am I a fixed up devotee? Am I a bewildered devotee? What am I? Sometimes it's very confusing. But these pastimes inspired me so much that yes, it is a fact that we can help others because we have received mercy from Guru, Krishna and the Vaishnavas. But the very same help that we give to others, when we are in that situation, we need the help of other devotees. So Lord Ram, the supreme independent Lord, Atmaram, he is self-satisfied. But he himself takes help of Lakshman in the future when he himself feels great remorse. And of course, these are all pastimes of the Lord. Just like the example is given that in a drama, a rich person may act as a beggar. But then that's just for the drama, for the emotions to be exchanged in that scenario. So the Lord is self-satisfied. But then he's playing these pastimes just to attract the devotees and to satisfy his associates. Ram is peaceful, but Dashrath, the three people in the palace are in three different emotions. Kaikai is rejoicing, Ram is peaceful, but as Kaikai is maintaining pressure, Dashrath, seeing no means of escape, realizing that Ram will now walk out of the palace, the king fiercely spoke up. He said, "Oh perverted woman, I disown you today. That very hand that I clasped in marriage in front of the fire chanting the holy mantras, I pronounce, I breathe that from today onwards, you and your son have no right over my life. Ram will offer the rights to my life. I will soon die because of your words. O woman of evil conduct, and when I die, you shall make no offerings to me." Now in Kali Yuga, this would lead to divorce and separation and whatever else. But this is something very terrible for a wedded Vedic wife to be left by her husband with no shelter. Kaikai fumed. And she said, "What is the use of these empty words?" Knowing in her heart that my husband has already rejected me, favoring Kaushalya, she spoke further piercing words. "Oh Dashrath, why do you say such things scathing and hurtful to my heart? Sir, summon Ram. Give up this false agonizing and stand up to do your duty as a Kshatriya." Dashrath, seeing completely no recourse, completely helpless, desperate, said that in this hour of desperation, I shall only take refuge of Ram. Being my gentle son, please bring my gentle son before me. And in that desperate state, he again fainted. And Ram left. The first thing that Lord Ram did is he went to Kaushalya's palace. Kaushalya, as a loving mother, she said that you have just met Dashrath, and I'm sure that the king wants you to be coronated very soon, and the whole day's activities will take so much time. So please be over here. Don't even take the trouble to go to your own palace with Sita. I will feed you breakfast. And showering unlimited amount of Vatsalya Prem on Lord Ram, she wanted to feed him breakfast and offer him love. In that situation, Lord Ram had to break the news that, Mother, the coronation for me is over right now. I have to wear forest clothes, live into the forest for the next 14 years, eat roots and fruits, and Bharat will be the person who will be crowned king in the near future. Kaushalya fell as a tree severed at the root. She started crying out that previously I had the pain of being childless. Now I will be pained even more because I have a child like Lord Ram, and for the next 14 years I shall not be able to see him. Why is my heart like a steel that does not shatter hearing this news? If by one's own sweet will death would come, then I would depart immediately. Life is useless for me anymore. Just as a calf would go behind a cow, oh Ram, please take me along with you. And she piteously started crying. As his mother was wailing, Ram only became more and more desirous to escape, run away from Ayodhya, even as a lordly elephant who would want to escape when surrounded by men who are goading him with firebrands. Because again and again he was being attacked by the emotions and the affection of the devotees. Lakshman, his dear brother, steps in. And he encourages Kaushalya. He says, Mother, it is the rule of the scripture that the mother's order is higher than the father's order. So Dashrath may have given one order, but I request you that you order Lord Ram not to go to the forest. Then let me see how he will transgress your order. Fixed in his determination, Ram, trying to console Lakshman, and Kaushalya spoke, that both you and Lakshman, you do not understand my mind. Thus you harass me most painfully. He said, happiness and distress in this world are both temporary. Therefore the foolish who think that they are the body composed of the material elements. The sensual pleasures, enjoyments, they last only for a few moments. The real person is one who knows where real happiness lies, in the soul and in the pursuit of godly life. Now, please allow me, this golden opportunity has come to me to pursue godly life by following the orders of my father. Please allow me to go. If my father, for virtue, is ready to forsake his desires and happiness and abandon his son for the sake of truthfulness, can he not allow me to follow in his footsteps? It's all destiny, he said. Ram in his heart felt no anger towards Kaikeyi. And then he spoke his final words to Kaushalya and Ram and Lakshman. It's very instructive and something that's inspiring in our own personal spiritual lives while practicing Krishna consciousness. Lord Ram said, if you cannot see any reason or understand why joy and sorrow comes in our life, or why birth and death comes in our life, when the best laid plans in this world are destroyed, at a moment's notice, one should know that there is a hand of God. It is the will of providence. Therefore, please, my dear mother and brother, please allow me to leave. Lakshman, furrowing his brows, hissing like an angry cobra in a hole, his frowning face appearing like that of a furious lion, was difficult to gaze at. Very angry, he spoke up, "This is a conspiracy! If it is true that Kaikeyi wanted the boons, then she would have asked for these two boons long time back. There is something wrong here today. Today you will see me rushing at the enemy like an uncontrollable king of elephants. Not even the gods together will stop me. I am going to destroy Dashrath, and I am going to destroy anyone who is going to support him. The supporters will be deprived of their life, or they will be the ones who will have to escape to the forest. And they will find no shelter even in destiny when my fierce strength ruthlessly cuts them down." Lakshman drew his sword and he cleaved his sword in the air with great anger. He said, these arms are not meant simply to add to my attractiveness. Nor is this bow a mere ornament. Nor is my sword and quivers hanging as a badge of honor. All these are meant to crush the enemy. Today, arrows will fall like incessant rain. My sword will flash like lightning. And every dark person that comes around it will be slashed to pieces. The earth will be thick with the arms and legs of heroes when the anger of Lakshman is shot on the army of Dashrath. Tell me, where is the enemy? And speaking like that, Lakshman becomes very angry. And then Lord Ram speaks to Lakshman. And Lakshman becomes pacified only when Lord Ram agrees to take him into the forest with him. Pacifying Sita is an entire ordeal. It's a very amazing story of how Lord Ram's conversation takes place with Sita and how he satisfies her and takes her also into the forest. So I would like to end with today's discussion on the love of Bharat and his mood and emotion which he had, which was the real reason Lord Ram came back into Ayodhya. So today is Ram Navami, the appearance of Lord Ram into this world to illuminate and enlighten the hearts of everyone and to specifically satisfy the devotees. So this is the beautiful mood of Bharat. When his heart was illuminated and enlightened, and this love he had for Lord Ram, that inspired Lord Ram to come back to Ayodhya. Similarly, by following in the footsteps of these great devotees, when we can see this, we can appreciate these moods of the great devotees and try to bring them in our lives, then Lord Ram will also appear in our hearts. And then we can truly celebrate Ram Navami, not only as a festival outside, but as a constant festival within our heart. The description is that the battle is won. Lord Ram on the Pushpak Viman is flying from Lanka, coming towards Ayodhya, and Mother Sita is sitting next to him. And the Vanaras, they request Lord Ram that we also would like to see your coronation. So Lord Ram says, okay, come along. And all the Vanaras are on the Pushpak Viman. And that Lord Ram is showing all the battlefield and all the field of pastimes to Mother Sita, showing where Kumbhakarna was killed and all the other great warriors were killed. And then they are flying towards Kishkindha Kshetra, above the Kishkindha Kshetra. At that time, one desire comes in the heart of Mother Sita. And she says that you have carried all the Vanaras for your coronation, but all their wives, they are missing them for a long time in Kishkindha Kshetra. So why don't you please allow all their wives also to come? So this is the heart of a devotee. In one Radhashtami lecture, one great devotee mentioned that this is our hope. Because Radharani in her heart feels that Krishna can be loved and served in such a huge way, but I am insufficient and incapable. So I need the help of so many more devotees. And in that way, we have hope. Because not that she needs help, but then this is her heart, that let more and more devotees be engaged in the service of the Lord. So Mother Sita, immediately when she sees all those ladies, immediately she also feels that why not they also get a chance to see the beautiful coronation of Sita Ram in Ayodhya. And then they come very close to Ayodhya. At this time, Lord Ram tells Hanuman, please go ahead. Meet Bharat. Where was Bharat doing his austerities? Nandigram, correct. Meet Bharat in Nandigram. And give him this news that very soon Lord Ram is appearing. At that time, look at his facial expressions carefully, because face is the index of one's mind. So then Hanuman goes ahead and he tells Bharat that Lord Ram is very soon coming. What is Bharat's response? Very amazing. He says that Lord Ram, he gave me the kingdom for 14 years, but I am eager and desperate to give the kingdom back to him for eternity. These were his first words. He says, to my Lord, I want to offer it because I cannot take responsibility of this kingdom. In fact, he says, Dhuram eka kinanastam rishabena baliyasha kishoreva kurumbharam navadum iham utsahe. He says, just like a young calf cannot carry the load that is meant for a big powerful bull, I am like a small tiny calf. Kishoreva gurumbharam, like a small calf. Rishabena baliyasha, powerful bull. What he can carry, I cannot carry. So I do not have the strength to bear the burden of the kingdom anymore. I am like a small calf. Therefore, I'll beg Lord Ram, I'll fall at his feet, who is a powerful bull, to kindly take the burden. The Acharya has explained that the Lord has given this material world to the living entities, and he has endowed the soul with a body, with a mind, with an intelligence, and other faculties and talents to purify himself and offer all these things to the Lord. Just like Bharat is offering whatever was given by the Lord back to the Lord, similarly the living entity should use everything at his disposal, all his talents and facilities, to offer to the Lord. Thus, when a devotee once and for all surrenders to the Lord completely, everything that is at his command and disposal, after this entire purificatory process is over, then it's alone the Lord who can bear the burden, and the living entity acts as the Lord's instrument. It is not his burden, it's the Lord's burden. He can easily carry it as a powerful bull, but the living entity as his instrument does whatever the Lord instructs. Another beautiful example that Bharat speaks is that the governance of this world or the activities in this world is like a powerful dam. Now by the flow of the river, the dam becomes more and more weak. So sometimes the dam has to be covered and protected by straw, by different things, so that the water does not pass through the dam and does not leak. So he says that I am like that dam, and the flow of this material world is like this powerful river. And gradually over a period of time, it is a fact that this dam, this life of mine, will not stand strong. Therefore, I request the Lord to fit all the holes in my life and thus make me strong to face the currents of this world and surrender to him in devotion. I am incapable, he says. I'm totally dependent on Lord Ram. And then he starts telling Hanuman, hey, wait a minute. I thought that I am the dam and the Lord is giving me strength. But actually the fact is the Lord is everything and I am dependent upon him. Gatim khara evashvasya hamsayasyeva chavayasah nanvetum utsahe rama tavamargam arindama. He says, what am I before you, O Lord Ram? Can a crow stand in comparison with a swan? Can an ass run like a horse? O Ram, there is none to match you in your valor and mercy. I do not presume to have your proficiency to govern. I immediately want to surrender everything to you. So the Acharya has explained that the living entity is like a crow. In the conditioned stage, it wants to eat anything and everything that comes in its vision. Whatever I see, I am the Lord of all that I survey. Whatever I hear, I want to eat that, enjoy that. But the Lord is like a paramhamsa, a swan. It's very selective in its feed. What is clean, what is unclean. The Lord is transcendental. And the other example is very beautiful. It is explained that the ass cannot run like the horse. That's one thing. The second thing is, the ass knows that the burden belongs to the master. Although it's carrying the burden belongs to the master. So Bharat is very interestingly speaking the spirit of his heart, that I am like an ass who's carrying the burden of this kingdom, but I know that this burden actually belongs to my master. And the horse, in the Upanishads, the word Ashva also connotes the universal spirit that pervades everywhere and enjoys everything. That means that which is transcendental. So compared to the horse, the ass is an ordinary pedestrian. So the horse is free. He can go anywhere he likes. He can do what he wants because he's not confined by the things of this world. So the Lord is supremely free. He can do what he likes. He can carry this burden. But I am like an ass. The spirit in my heart is, all this belongs to the Lord. And I was doing it as his instrument all these years. But now that the Lord is coming back to Ayodhya, it is a great festival. I beg at his feet to come back as soon as possible and the Lord appear in our lives. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantrat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Ram Navami Maha Mahotsav ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande.